Hi, welcome to the Japan Travel Podcast. Japan Travel Podcast, ようこそ! And best wishes for Tom if you live in the Northern Hemisphere. I'm your host, Sébastien Duval, in Tokyo on the 28th of September 2022, and this episode 9 about people to know features the Australian Nathan Eden, who owns ski accommodations in Myoko Kogen. Today, he discusses the snow and ski industry in Japan, introduces his career influenced by his wife's cancer, and shares his thoughts about travel in Japan, including his best and worst memories, both at the same place during the same trip. Check the notes to see how to contact him or make a reservation. Last year, he got 16 meters and a half of snow, and he expects as much this year. And big thanks to our remote intern Jesse, who helped behind the scenes with ideas and sound editing. Thanks for being with us today, Nathan. How are you doing?
My pleasure. Very well, thank you.
Where are you now? How is the weather?
I'm in Myoko Kogen in Niigata-ken, Niigata Prefecture. Unfortunately, today is not so good. It's cloudy and rainy, but that's to be expected in Myoko. We get a lot of snow in winter and then a lot of rain in summer.
How is it with autumn? Do you start to have autumn leaves very soon, or is it in 1 month?
Actually, I noticed that yesterday the leaves are starting to fall. It's just as soon as it ticks over to autumn. It's already started. By early next month, there'll be changes in the leaves quite noticeably.
How long have you been in Japan?
5 years.
Why did you come to Japan?
I first came to Japan in 2016. I was working online and I could travel. And I came with my now wife. It was more of an extended holiday for 6 months. We went back to Australia and then came back to Japan with a view to staying long term. I was going to work as a tour guide and she hadn't quite figured out what she was going to do. Almost immediately after coming back, she was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Oh, okay.
And that changed my plans considerably. I decided I wasn't working as a tour guide anymore and that I would find a job where I could be closer to her, essentially. And after a couple of months of the initial treatment, I sort of found us work where we could both work alongside each other. And I could see her more often and take care of her, I guess, essentially.
How is she doing now?
Great. It's been 5 years. So end of the treatment, almost 5 years to the day, actually. So yeah, all good.
Do you plan to change your plans now that she's healthy again?
Well, I think those plans have somehow put us on the course that we're meant to be on, if you know what I mean. Our roots are firmly planted in Myoko now, and we went to Nozawa originally to manage hotels on behalf of somebody else, and then we thought, well, we can do this ourselves, so now we've got two places and we're not going anywhere.
So what do you do now?
Right now we have accommodations in Myoko Kogen, ski accommodation at the base of Mount Myoko, so a few hundred meters away from our nearest ski resort. There's a handful of ski resorts in the Myoko Kogen area, depending on your definition of where Myoko starts and finishes, up to 9 or 10. And we have a renovated Japanese-style lodge called Myoko House that we operate. And starting this coming season, we'll also have directly across the road a self-contained accommodation called Myoko Apartments. We'll be nice and busy as soon as international tourism is allowed to return.
Do you do anything on the side?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm doing some copywriting for a few Australian companies at the moment.
And for people who don't know Myoko Kogen, or even Niigata, who don't know the geography of Japan at all, is access easy from Tokyo would be one, and through some airport?
Our international guests fly into either Haneda or Narita, and you can send to Nagano Station, is probably the easiest, and then the local train from there, give or take 90 minutes from...
By Shinkansen.
From Tokyo Station, yeah. I think you had Jerome on the podcast recently.
And yes.
I listened to him. He was working at Matarau. Out the very window that I'm sitting at now, I can see Matarau, where he was working at the Niigata side of that. He mentioned it's on the border of Niigata and Nagano prefectures. Yep.
Your business, Myoko House and Myoko Apartments, can you explain a bit the difference between the lodgings?
Yeah, well, Myoko House is a renovated Minshoku-style accommodation. It's a shared bathroom, that sort of thing. We make meals for the guests. I think the pro for that for a lot of people, especially people that stay for a couple of weeks, is that it feels like home. It's sort of a family feel than a big hotel. Across the road at Myoko Apartments, when it's finished in about a month's time, will be literally a self-contained accommodation. So we will have 3 apartments in the future. This season, we'll only have 1. And we also have an on-site co-working space so people can work away from home, and then a little gym downstairs as well.
And you have a restaurant inside the building or nearby?
Inside Myoko House, we have a gyoza bar. Akiko makes handmade gyoza. Traditional style, she makes vegan style. She makes a lot of desserts, and they're always quite popular. And then we also have a range of nihonshus as well.
To clarify for people who don't know what gyoza is, it's just dumplings. Your accommodation is for what kind of budget?
Our accommodation, I would say it ranges from 8,000 yen per night per person. It works out to be, in Australian dollars, I guess that's about $80, $85. At this point, it's quite good. And that includes breakfast and lodging and transfers and all that sort of thing to and from Yokogen Station and the ski resorts. So.
People typically stay just for 2 days, 3 days, or much longer than that?
We have Japanese guests and they typically will stay for a long weekend. Whereas when we've had international guests, it's not uncommon for them to stay in excess of a week.
How did you become an owner?
We spent 2 years in Nozawa. We were working for someone else. We enjoyed the life and it was something that we could do and make a success of. And so we went about trying to find how we would do that ourselves. I remember my wife's mother was integral in helping us find a place. I think we might have had the idea, whether it's right or wrong, that if it was me trying to find the place, I might get charged foreign prices. I don't know whether that's it. We were lucky enough to find the place that we did. It certainly needed some renovation. Considering our budget at the time, I think we did quite well. We've had good feedback. We're pretty happy with it. In terms of the new place at Myoko Apartments, the renovations are essentially back to the bones of the house and creating exact floor plan of what we want. So we've spent a lot more money on that. But we've also been pretty fortunate. The Japanese government has been reasonably helpful with grants.
How is it with the authorization to create that kind of business?
Well, I could say you need a Japanese wife to sort everything out.
That's okay. Nothing too complicated in any case. You need somebody who understands the language, who can communicate, but there is no complicated process.
There's more paperwork than there is in Australia, but I don't think it's particularly complicated.
To move to the pandemic, how have you been handling it 2 years and a half now?
Well, we have had a lot more opportunity to snowboard. It's just been an upshot. You've got to look at the positives. We've engaged with the domestic market as well, of course. We've had Japanese people. We've had foreigners living in Japan, people that coming from Yokosuka. You know, we've had guests, but it literally is a positive to be able to have more time snowboarding, experiencing what people come to Myoko for in the first place.
And how was the snow during these past 2 years?
It was awesome. Last season, if I'm 100% honest, was, I won't say scary, but it did get to the point in about third week of February where if it kept snowing for a couple more days, I would have had nowhere to put the snow.
Just to come back a little bit to Yokosuka, you said you had clients from Yokosuka. These were American soldiers and their families, or I think there is a base around there, no?
Yeah, they work for the Navy.
Looking at the future, how are your reservations for this winter?
Hopeful. I mean, we have got quite a few bookings. I'm a little bit concerned about the bookings that we have for Christmas time because we do have a handful of families wanting to come. There are certainly plenty of hopeful people.
Assuming there is no problem with the borders, things get cleared up and people can confidently book, do you still have lots of rooms in your lodge?
For Myoko House, we actually have a very large group that had booked out the whole lodge for the better half of January, which is obviously our peak of the peak season. They have recently decided to postpone until the next year because of the uncertainty of being able to come and organizing such a large group. Therefore, we do have a lot of our peak season only just open up a few days ago. So we have a bit of availability, yeah.
Talking a bit about Japan, what's your take on winter trips?
We've had quite a few people ask the question, do I need winter tires? And the answer to that is always yes. Sometimes when you hire a car from Tokyo, they won't necessarily assume that you're going to a snowy region if that's where you're going, and therefore the insurance won't cover potential accidents and often they won't give you winter tires included. So what we always suggest is catch the Shinkansen to, say, Nagano and rent a car from Nagano where they will automatically assume that you are, and therefore you'll have the insurance and you'll have the winter tires included.
I don't ski a lot, but when I do, I typically go to hot springs. Mm-hmm. So is it something you recommend to your clients?
Absolutely. Yeah, we don't have an onsen on site at Myoko House, but there's plenty in our area, absolutely.
Considering the skiing industry, I heard that things are kind of stable in the USA, France, Europe in general, but it's in decline in Japan. Do you remain optimistic for the future?
It's true that fewer Japanese people ski than perhaps they did during the 80s when there was more money to go around. That's quite certain, I think. But as evidenced in places like Niseko and Nozawa and Hakuba and now Myoko and Madurai, Foreign investment seems to be taking off, even despite the pandemic, as evidenced by demand and our existing bookings, mostly from New Zealand and Singapore and Hong Kong, even China. A lot of people want to come skiing in Japan because of the quality of the snow and the cultural experience too.
And I'm super interested in sustainability, so let me just ask that tricky question maybe, but according to some studies, snow tourism is at risk because snow is melting in many places, completely disappearing from many destinations by 2050 due to climate change. Do you have any special awareness about that? And do you do anything special with your business?
There are resorts who have already started to use snowmaking machines, which they do in a lot of part of the world anyway, but I'm sure that doesn't help the problem. And I'm sure that makes the problem worse, using energy to create snow. And so I guess the wider issue is the one that's relevant. It's hard in a place like Myoko House because it is such an old building and we're just sort of renovating the exterior. The first thing I can think of that we do at Myoko House is use sensor lighting, saving that tiny little bit of energy. But in terms of power and gas and all the rest of it, it's hard to change that. We looked at even using hydro energy, but unfortunately the gradient of the creek behind the property isn't steep enough. I know there are other people conscious too. I was talking to another lodge owner who's just bought a new place in Myoko. He does have a creek behind his house with enough gradient to employ hydro energy. And so he's doing that.
Do you know if you can get electricity that comes from renewable sources?
There is a little bit of a push towards hydro energy from the Japanese government, so I'm told. I have a good friend who's very much into the renewables and knows all about it, and we talk quite often. The solar panel thing, I remember when we bought Myoko House in 2019, we're coming from Nagano Prefecture to Niigata Prefecture, and I remember at the time, I don't know if it was a government subsidy or a company, I guess it was to do with the government, but a company who would essentially install the solar panels for you, and once they've paid for themselves in terms of energy going back to the grid, then you would keep them and you wouldn't have to worry about it. Okay. That wasn't available in Niigata. Obviously, we're disappointed, but when you look around the houses in Myoko, you don't see any solar panels like you do in Nagano.
We talked a lot about snow, so let's talk about when there is no snow. Sure. Is your area attractive during what we would call the low season, so not winter?
It's my understanding, and I could have my information come from an unreliable source, but it is my understanding that Myoko used to be one of the summer retreats for the emperor and his family, the imperial family of Japan. There's hiking, there's biking, there's onsen. Fewer people than winter. It won't ever rival winter, but there's bike events and music festivals that have started. We're quite close to Nojiri Lake, and so you get a lot of people there on the weekends, sailing, swimming, then up paddleboarding, the rest of it. Yeah, Togakushi's nearby. So really old cedar trees. Yeah, as I say, it's not ever going to rival winter, I wouldn't imagine, but it's beautiful in summer, absolutely.
The biking is hard, like mountain biking, or is it easier?
Well, there's both. There's mountain biking. Our closest mountain biking course to us here is up in Blick, just the Ikunatara ski resort, so that's 2 kilometers away. And there's a few of them around, but there's also bike riding road events or semi-road event. We're actually sponsoring one of the events coming up very soon, the Grand Fondo Myoko, at 2 laps of an 80-kilometer course that starts at Nojiri Lake. We're the first checkpoint along the course here at Myoko House, and then it goes up to Akakura Onsen and then over to Matarau, where Jerome was talking about before. That event is becoming more and more popular. We've had guests coming back for this year's event that have been to all three.
That was about the low season in your area. What do you think about the low season in Japan in general? So not the cherry blossom season, for example.
During the rainy season. I'm pretty glasses half full when it comes to that. I think that the forest is still green. And if anything, sort of the rain, the wet looks more beautiful. Japan has seasons, very well-defined seasons compared to where I grew up, at least in Australia. And so a rainy season is very green, and that makes it vibrant, and it's misty in the mountains. I think it makes it beautiful.
What freelance activities have you done to promote Japan?
So I've done a few with Japan Travel. The most obvious of which was September 2018. I went with Tom.
Tom is our creative director.
So Tom and I, we did a whirlwind trip around Kyushu for 6 days. It was a year from the Rugby World Cup, which was in September 2019. And so we went to areas and a couple of stadiums just to sort of illuminate different things that people could do if they're coming to watch a match.
In between matches, if they had a few days to explore. Did you do any other trip with my colleagues?
Yeah, I've done a couple. We went to Hagi.
In Yamaguchi. I've been there too, yeah.
Hagi is just gorgeous. I don't know, I've had a bit of everything.
Let's move to a bit more personal questions. First thing, what was your best experience in Japan? Not necessarily about travel.
My best experience is having a Japanese family and sort of being treated so well. We just hosted my wife's family here. Her whole extended family came last week. You know, everybody got together. They're just great. They're just very welcoming. That is a cultural experience, I guess, that you're not necessarily afforded if you just come to visit on a holiday. And that's obviously been the point of difference for me, having been able to stay here for such a long time. That's something I'm appreciative of.
You're from Australia. If you compare life in general between Australia and Japan, how is it? Just one thing.
There's more paperwork in Japan. There's more micromanagement of time.
And do you miss something about Australia?
I miss my family. I miss halloumi cheese, which isn't readily available in Japan. There's all these little things that I miss, but the main one would obviously be family.
How was it when you came first time to Japan? Did you get a culture shock?
I don't know if you'd call it shock, because my wife and I have both worked in tourism for such a long time that I've sort of become accustomed to change. But one thing I did notice was that I came with her the very first time and I'd never been to Japan. She hadn't seen her family in 3 years, and we got off the train and they were just instantly warm. However, what did stick out to me was they didn't hug each other. If that was Australia, obviously that's the first thing you do. I remember finding that really weird, and I asked her later, like, why didn't you hug your parents? And it was like, why would I?
Let's move to the kind of things you like. What's your favorite taste?
The very first restaurant I went to when I came to Japan was Ieke Ramen, Yokohama style ramen.
What's special about that type of ramen?
It's tonkotsu shoyu ramen.
So it's not pork-based broth.
Yes, but you wouldn't eat it all the time. And I'm sure there are people that do have it each lunchtime. But if I did, I would be morbidly obese. There's a lot of calories involved. It's a special occasion thing for me, but you go and have it and it's quite heavy. I don't know. It's just like an indulgent taste for me, but it's the first one that I had when I first came to Japan. And perhaps that sticks in my memory for that reason, but I still like it.
What's your favorite smell?
My favorite smell would be natto.
This is kind of a disgusting thing, right? It looks like a spider nest. It's super stinky. I know at least two-thirds of the foreigners think the thing is just disgusting. And you love the smell?
Yeah. For those old enough to remember the movie Gremlins, it does remind me of that when they're hatching. It's pretty gross. It smells gross initially. At first, I thought it smelled like vomit, so it doesn't sound very appetizing. But as time goes on, I've become accustomed to it. I remember being on a tour. I was away from my home in Japan for an extended period of time, and I found myself wandering into a konbini and buying a maki roll with natto inside.
Yeah.
That was the first time I actively chose to eat it. Ever since then, I've enjoyed it. If I go to stay in a hotel that has a traditional Japanese breakfast, I'll eat it with rice for breakfast or even a raw egg.
Yeah. What's your favorite sound in Japan?
Either the accumulated snow falling off my roof during winter, which indicates a good day on the mountain in terms of powder snow, and then also the snow clearer who comes down the road to clear the snow. Again, that's probably the first thing that wakes you up in the morning, 4:30, with the noises of the snow clearer, and that again means it's going to be a good day for me and for my guests on the mountain.
Let's move to the questions about travel. What did living in Japan enable you to do compared to somebody who comes back again and again and again?
Well, I think I've got the benefit of family. I enjoy engaging with people and learning a little bit more about the lives of people who live in Japan. And having the benefit of family to help me with my Japanese, to help me sort of understand the life that I'm experiencing or the people that I'm meeting and their lives, that's beyond the understanding that you would get on a self-guided tour.
You certainly need a driving license to move around because you're in the countryside, but do you do lots of road trips or do you use mostly trains?
As much as I like trains in Japan, very punctual and reliable, it's very popular, at least among my wider friend group, to have a van and deck that out in the back with a mattress. And people will stay at a Michinoeki or even the car park of a konbini, you know, visit the onsen and sort of have life on the road like that. My wife and I did that last year. We went down to Kyushu and around Kyushu living in the back of the van. And I know that is possible in other countries. It is possible in Australia, but I believe you have to pay for a designated campsite and all that sort of thing. There's a bit more freedom in Japan when it comes to that sort of thing, I think.
What was your worst travel experience in Japan?
Something that perhaps other people might find a negative experience. We had one situation where my wife and I flew to Okinawa into Naha. And then after Naha, we went out to Akajima. And we stayed there for a few days. And then there was a typhoon approaching that we weren't aware of. We should have been checking, but we were too busy snorkeling and having fun. Yeah. And then one day we woke up to realize that we were the only tourists left there.
Your wife should have known better, right? Because you're a gaijin, but she's Japanese. So,
well, I didn't.
So how did you handle that?
We went to a restaurant to try and get dinner and they were closed. And they said, didn't your accommodation owner tell you that there's a typhoon coming? And I guess we were sort of aware that there was a typhoon at some point somewhere, but we didn't know it was immediately threatening us. So we didn't worry about it too much. But then the boats decided they weren't running. So, of course, we couldn't leave. We didn't want to stay there because our flight back to Kyushu was in 2 days from then. So We didn't know what to do, obviously. But so we waited till the next day. We were able to charter a helicopter.
Wow.
So we spent a little bit more money than we'd expected. But in return, we got an experience. And I wouldn't call it necessarily a bad experience, but I'm pretty sure my wife would, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people would, because obviously you can imagine how a helicopter behaves approaching typhoon. So we got blown around a little bit and it was a little bit scary, but as opposed to a bad experience, I just call it an experience, if I'm honest.
So let's change a bit the question. Were there any places or activities you did that didn't live up to your expectations?
One that comes to mind is Kinkakuji in Kyoto. The Golden Pavilion. You'll see in a million Facebook
super famous,
Instagram
yeah.
posts. It's very famous and most people have probably already seen a picture of it. It is beautiful. However, it's always heavily touristed to the point where you might feel like you're in a massive rugby scrum and you just have to get your camera out ready to take a picture. But there's no time to be alone and absorb the tranquility of the place because there is none.
I think it's still a place I would recommend to people who come to Japan for the first time just to have the sight, but not plan to spend much time there and just move to other places. Okay, let's move to the good experiences. Could you select three of your top memories in Japan?
I mentioned Akajima as a bad experience, but I'll also mention it as a good because...
Oh, nice. Okay.
It was beautiful. It's a tiny island and very traditional village that still exists there. There's deer everywhere. There's turtles in the water. Naturally, it's absolutely gorgeous and it's very unpretentious.
Second good memory?
Second place would be Yunohira in Oita.
Never heard about it. Oita Prefecture? Okay.
Yunohira is a very small onsen village near Yufuin. Yufuin is quite a popular tourist place. I went there with Japan Travel. We were meant to stay in Yufuin, but from what I understand, it was very busy and booked out. And so we stayed in Yunohira instead. And we stayed at Ryokan with a cave onsen. Surrounded by rocks. It was awesome. I can't remember the name of the ryokan, but it was right on the small creek that runs through the village of Yunohira. Alongside the river is a lantern-lit cobblestone little path. You wouldn't call it a street, but it's just a path that runs through the middle of the village. And on the particular night that we stayed there, you know, we had the onsen and then kaiseki dinner, and then just grabbed my camera and a stroll down the cobblestone path. And there's lanterns lighting your way, no one else there. And like a misty night with a bit of sort of misty rain and just the ethereal sort of otherworldly feeling of escaping everyone. It was really beautiful. There was no one around and it was lovely.
What season was that?
That was September.
Okay, yeah. So it's probably good in many seasons because autumn tends to be really nice too afterwards. So.
And I believe that Yunohira used to be the more popular of the two between Yunohira and Yufuin, but...
Mm-hmm.
There's some sort of aggressive marketing campaign, I think, that Yufuin undertook. And that's definitely the most popular of the two these days.
And the third great memory, Hagi?
I went there again with Japan Travel. And we were lucky enough to go around to different places and experience all the good places there. There's a very good information center there. It's absolutely fantastic. It has a VR sort of interactive experience, which gives you insight into the history and the culture of the place. And then you can go from there to the shrines and temples mentioned in that VR experience and actually see the place for yourself. And it's just really well done. And obviously it has also the castle town and the beach. And
I went to the castle town. Oh, beach too. Okay. Yeah, the castle town is really good. I think I went around on a rickshaw too.
You can do a kimono experience and get dressed up, fitted out in a kimono and then wander around and then go to a tea ceremony.
Yeah, I was wearing a kimono too. And the owners were really nice because I asked if there would be open for gays, lesbians to use the kimono of the other gender, because I know in some places people would be kind of shocked. And they said, oh, yeah, absolutely no problem. In fact, we are used to people doing that, not because of the sexual orientation, but because they have lots of cosplayers who come and just take photos in the city with old castle town areas that provides very beautiful traditional walls. The park too with very nice view. I think you have been to very different places, because that's Okinawa, that's Kyushu, that's west of the main island Honshu. You'd certainly have been to Tokyo. Have you been to Hokkaido too?
Not Hokkaido yet. That's certainly on the list.
So that's on your to-do list. Okay.
I'm not going to get the chance to go in winter because of work, and that's when we're busy. But I hear it's very beautiful in summer too, for hiking and seafood, if you're into seafood. And, you know, just the natural beauty, I think, is something kind of looking forward to. And I believe that the population density is far below anywhere else in Japan. And so
it's a huge island, right? Saying Hokkaido is an island is kind of not making people imagine the right thing. It's just huge. You would fly from one city to another because it's so big. And I've been there during summer and winter. Winter was to see the cranes. And in summer, I've been to Furano to see the lavender fields, of course. I mean, lavender, sunflower stuff. Based on all your trips, is there one piece of advice you have or something you would like people to remember?
I guess my number one piece of advice for people coming to Japan would be to not expect it to be like their home country. I've had friends come and visit where we went to an izakaya to eat and refused to eat because there was weird stuff on the menu. Or also going to an izakaya for the first time, one of my friends coming to Japan, he was, I won't say infuriated, but he just wanted a beer. He was like, why do they keep charging me just to sit down? I shouldn't have to pay to sit down. I just want to have a beer. I don't want to have any food, but they keep bringing me this little bit of food. And
yeah, because in some countries you have a table charge. In Japan, it's not called a table charge, and it basically works like a table charge, but you get for free some food. So in fact, the price is the price of the food.
But I think there's just little things like that, right? And that's probably the case in any different culture you experience, is that the battle is to accept the fact that it's not going to be the same from where you came.
Is there a movie you would recommend watching before coming to Japan?
I watched quite a few documentaries on Japan before I came because I was excited about coming in the first time. There's one I watched, I think it's called Ryan Gander's The Idea of Japan. Ryan Gander's an English artist. He looks at, I guess, the obsession of Japan with visuals. You know, lots of people associate Japan with anime and manga and bright lights and just all these visuals. And something that might surprise people when they come to Japan too is people still use fax machines and business cards and physical cash. And I don't remember exactly if Ryan goes into discussing the whole thing or whether I just jumped to conclusions thinking about it, but it certainly prompted the thought that there's an obsession with tangible things in Japan for whatever reason. It's a culturally ingrained thing where your business card is something you can touch. The money is something you can touch. And there's also, when you look at it, the difference between, a website in Australia and a Japanese website for Japanese people.
Completely different.
Way more visually noisy. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or even turning on the TV and there's someone in the corner. You know, Japan TV basically invented the reaction channel, right? Because there's always someone in the corner watching someone else do something and then there's writing flashing across the screen. And it gave me a headache the first time I saw it. So there's this thing with visuals and the idea of Japan touches on that.
For residents who speak some Japanese, would you have any special tip or recommendation?
Yeah, my advice to people who can speak a little bit of Japanese is, you don't need to start a YouTube channel. There's plenty of them.
And don't need to start a podcast either. Just listen to us and recommend to people. Okay. Talking a bit broadly about travel in Japan, what are your impressions about inclusive tourism and hospitality? So people with wheelchair, vegans, things like this.
Yeah, I think there's a concerted effort, certainly in, you know, train stations in the bigger cities. And I'll be honest, I don't see much of that in places like Myoko and country areas. It does make it difficult, obviously, because with reference to wheelchairs, a place like Myoko or even Nozawa or Hokkaido, these are places where people go to ski, they go to hike, they go to bike. There's fewer facilities for people with those challenges because of that reason, perhaps. I don't think that it's where it needs to be in terms of accessibility for people in wheelchairs and that sort of thing, but it is certainly on the way in the city. And I'm sure that will filter through to smaller places and wider travel eventually.
leaving wheelchair aside, because obviously in the area that's something a bit difficult. So I saw a website for Okinawa Prefecture, and they did something for wheelchair users so they can go on the sandy beaches. And in fact, it floats, it can go in the sea. So I don't know, for skiing, maybe there is something that's doable too. Let's put mobility a bit aside. So for example, people who travel with kids and vegans, what do you think about your region? I know your wife is making vegan gyoza and cakes, but let's talk about the region a bit more broadly. If people stay at your place and travel around, how is it?
Well, for families, it's great. I mean, we all primarily cater to families, and that's the idea. Okay. We're a kilometer out of Akakura Onsen town, and so we are here by design because it's a little bit quieter. You don't have people drinking, walking up and down the street, and therefore the kids can play in the snow directly out the front while parents sit by the fire and watch them. So for families, I think it's a good place for that. Vegans, I've got friends, both foreigners and Japanese people, who live in Japan and are vegan. And say you go to get ramen, or you ask for a vegetarian ramen, it might still have a fish-based stock or something involved.
I think that's typically the problem is the broth, right? Can be made with kombu, so with some kind of seaweed, but most of the time it's pork-based, so it's not good for vegans, not good for Muslims. Maybe the staff will not think about it. They will think about the ingredients they put on top, but they will not think about it.
So even if you are able to ask the staff in Japanese, they might not appreciate your particular concern about it. So they're just going to say, yeah, it's fine, it's vegetarian. And you'll say, is it vegan? Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I know there are some places where I asked the staff and they said stuff was vegan, and I asked for the broth specifically and said, oh, yeah, no, it's not vegan. They just didn't think about it because it's not like the piece of meat or the half-cooked egg you have on the top, and they just don't think about it. Well, at least people can stay at your place. They can get a vegan breakfast with, I don't know, soy milk.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, okay. We made it too. All sorts of dietary requirements.
Your wife can do vegan gyoza, but if people stay a long time and want different food, I suppose you can just fry some vegetables and do something with sesame oil or something like this, right?
She does specials all the time. There's plenty of restaurants in Miyoko. We have an on-site kitchen where guests can eat with us, or they can go elsewhere. People that stay 1 or 2 weeks, obviously that's going to be a thing. They're not just going to eat gyoza every day of their life. But yeah, we do have other specials, other different things that Akiko makes, whatever she feels like making. So yeah.
If you have people with allergies or vegans or Muslim, whatever, let's say vegans, can you provide a vegan birthday cake or wedding anniversary cake?
Yes, and have done in the past, absolutely.
And people were happy?
Yes, that's because my wife's cooking it and not me. They might not be happy if I was cooking
it. We have been talking a lot, so is there something you want to add?
No, that's covered everything. I can't think of anything, but thanks for the opportunity. Have a chat.
Thanks for taking the time. Thanks for talking about the industry too. We don't have many people in the community who can talk about the snow industry and know it as well as you do. And I wish you good luck with the reopening of the borders, especially hoping everything is okay for you and your clients this winter.
Thank you very much.
If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe now to be notified about future episodes. And please leave reviews on your favorite platform. I've just visited Japan's Olive Island and attended the Tourism Expo Japan in Tokyo, so stay tuned if you want reports including the thoughts of other professionals in the coming weeks. If you have questions or thoughts to share, please email us at podcast@japantravel.com. Thank you for listening, thanks for helping, and sweet dreams of Japan!